Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, welcome everyone to the From the Shadows podcast. I am your host, Shane Grove. I've got a really cool guest to bring on here today. But before I do, I want to remind everybody that if you have a sighting or an event that you want to talk to us about, you can reach us at From the Shadows podcast on Facebook. You can find our forum page called After the Shadows. You can find me at Shane Grove Author on Instagram and send me a message. We have a From the Shadows podcast Instagram page. You can send us a message, or the good old-fashioned way, just go to the website, fromtheshadowspodcast.com, hit the contact button, send me an email. I will definitely read it, respond to you. We love to hear everybody's, as long as it's good comments about the podcast. I don't want to hear any bad comments. So, you know, I mean, we have really thin skin here and feelings, too. No, I'm kidding. You can say all the bad stuff you want. Just feel free to get a hold of us, because we'd love to hear eyewitness stories. And if we can, we'll, you know, get you on the show and share your story. And then I just want to remind everybody that if you want some extra content, we do have a Patreon page. If you become a member at certain levels, you can get our episodes a day or two early and commercial free. And then there's always some extra content up there that we stick up there as we record it. So go check that out if you just can't get enough, and say hi. So our guest today is a gentleman that comes from a very spooky, I'm going to just say, a spooky geographical location. We've had lots of stories from this area. And I was thankful. I reached out to this guy on a Facebook post, and he responded. And it's just, he's got some great stories and some great experiences that I know he wants to share. And we want to kind of dive into. So from the, spookiest corner of Appalachia, that's what I'm going to call it, Matthew. Welcome to the From the Shadows podcast.
What's up, Shane?
So I alluded to where, so you live in northeastern Kentucky, but you border southeastern Ohio and West Virginia, right?
Yeah, Wayne National Forest and basically Huntington and Ashland area.
Okay. And like I kind of said before, I blame all the spooky stuff in Northern Kentucky and the Wayne National Forest on West Virginia. Yeah. West Virginia is so messed up and creepy that I think everything's trying to, even the creepy stuff's trying to escape the more creepy stuff in West Virginia and finds its way to the Wayne National Forest in Kentucky. And I know our good friend Bo Kennedy of the Bump Podcast will appreciate me giving a shout out to his home state. So, sure. So Matthew, I know this, you got a long list of like experiences. So let's just get right into it and kind of tell us when you started having some paranormal experiences and what they were and just how they evolved.
All righty. Well, let's see. I was born in Frankfurt, Germany. My dad was the last person in the county to get drafted into Vietnam. He never actually went into battle. He just kind of hung out over in Germany for a while. So that's where I was born. I came back here when I was maybe like 6 months old. So I've got dual citizenship, but I don't have any memory of Germany. But we moved to Kentucky back around our family and stuff, and lived here in Ashland in the Westwood area up until I was three or four. And we got a new little house in Westwood. And at the time, I think my sister is about 18 months older than me, so she was already in kindergarten, maybe even first grade before I started school. So I was at home a lot, played outside. You know, if you live in Kentucky, you can see woods. Woods are close by, you know. So I, you know, hung outside a lot and was pretty aware of, you know, airplanes. And you had the airplanes back in the day. They were super loud. I don't know if you remember DC-10 flying over, but I mean, you almost had to put your hands over your ears.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, I do. I know. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Times have changed as far as air travel.
Bunch of diesel fuel blowing out the back of it and stuff. But I believe there's always like sonic booms. So I'm thinking people or the Air Force up at Dayton would like take off from there, get going like 700 miles an hour before they hit the river and then boom. And I was always like looking up going, what the hell? You know, like I was only at this point about 4 years old. So I was a pretty observant little kid. And one day, this is how it all started. My mom stuck her head out the back door as I was playing in the sandbox and was like, hey, come on in. You know, I've got grilled cheese, soup, whatever. So I gather up my matchbox cars and I'm pointing towards going towards the back door. And two houses down was my dad's best friend and he had some kids. And in their backyard, there was about an 80-foot tall pine tree. And this was 7:30 in the evening or so in the middle of the summer. So, you know, it was the lighting was just right. There was about a 70-foot wide classic disc-shaped dome tinted top UFO just sitting right beside that pine tree. And I'm sitting there staring at it. And the next thing I know, I'm at the top of the yard and it's right above where I was standing. And then I was back down where it was. And then I looked up and it was like going up and over Lamaster Hill, which was out back of my house. You know, I'd say several thousand feet away. It was kind of just wobbling over the hill. And I came inside and told my mom, it's like, I had to saw a spaceship. And she's like, whatever, eat your grilled cheese. But she, you know, 20 or 30 years later, I remember asking her about it. She said, oh yeah, I remember that. She said, I looked outside, was kind of creeped out, you know, like, so since then,
like did she see it too?
She didn't see it. No, but she knew I was serious, you know, like
now I want to, okay. So what you described, you like walked towards it, but didn't like realize you were walking towards it.
I don't remember walking. It's just like I was almost as if my memory places me like I was almost like teleported, if you will, you know, like,
okay,
I only went about 20 feet or so towards this thing before I stopped, and then it was over my head, but then I was up at the top of the yard, which, you know, I have no reason to go to the top of the yard. It's 150 foot up the hill. But I remember standing up there and looking at it, that it was over my house right where I was. And then it like cruised over top of me real slow, and I could see the bottom of it spinning, and I could see yellow lights around it. And it reminded me of a ride called the Spider at Camden Park.
Yeah.
Light.
Yeah, but I know what you're talking about, the Spider.
About the time it crossed over top of me is when I ended up back down by the door and saw it going over the hill. So.
And so your mom remembers that day, but it wasn't like, wasn't like there was missing time. Like she said, I told you to come in and you took like, it was an hour later before you came in.
But I don't recall having my Matchbox cars in my shirt, you know, cause I kind of like made a little pocket with my shirt to carry my Matchbox cars in. That's something I still don't know where my Matchbox cars went, but they might give those back to me one day. But since then, and every you know, shortly after, I was like obsessed with taking shit apart, like mechanical stuff. You know, just had to see how something would work. And this is when this is before grays were really kind of popular. Or, you know, socially acceptable. I would see two or three of them in my room and just thought, boy, you know, that's, you know, kind of like as you're dozing in and out, you know, like I just knew that there was a couple of them in my room. I would hear pecking at my window sometimes and just lay there stiff, you know, in my bed, like, holy shit, you know. But not long after that, I would like float around the house, like setting Indian style. And I could just like float around the house, just like wave your arms like you're going through water, but a little bit less resistance than water. But I thought it was neat that you could go through the living room and into the kitchen and kind of do a full circle back into my bedroom. And I remember mentioning that to my sister, I don't know, probably just 10 years ago. And she said, yeah, I used to do that in that house too. So really.
So you and your sister both remember feeling like you could float now, because do you really think you were physically doing it, or do you think it was something more mental that you could?
I believe it was more real than a vivid dream.
Okay.
So I just remember it as an action. Now, I'm just counting that as something odd that I remember. There's no physical proof to it or whatever. I could just, you know, like.
Well, I would say that's really odd, especially that you and your sister. I mean, there's not a lot of grade school kids that, hey, yeah, just flip. I'm not going to go to basketball practice tonight and have any of the elementary kids say, oh, well, I almost missed coming to basketball practice. I was floating around the house.
I remember doing it two or three times. And
well, I wonder, what do you think that was? Have you researched that?
Nope. Nope. I just calculated is that's something that people do, you know. Like I said, I'm 4 maybe 5 at this time, and after seeing the UFO, and then, you know, throughout the years, it's like I just figured everybody had seen one, everybody knew about them, you know. But accumulatively over the years, you know, to found out that nobody believes in them, you know, it's just a bunch of crap, it's, you know, folklore.
Well, and seeing the grays, or believing you saw the grays in your room, was that something else? You just were like, oh, everybody. Because this had to be about, I mean, when you're talking mid-70s probably, right?
77, yeah.
So 77. It's almost before Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Oh, yeah. I didn't see that. I mean, we had 3, 8, and 13, and maybe Channel 2, you know, like I didn't watch a lot of TV and stuff in the 70s. Seems like I do remember the $6 million man and Bigfoot. Oh, this is stupid, you know.
How dare you, sir? That is one of the greatest episodes ever.
I know. It seems like in about second grade, for some reason, I drew a alien gray head on the front of my notebook. And it's like, well, you know, it kind of looks like Spider-Man from, you know, there was like always Spider-Man episodes on The Electric Company.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We'd watch grade school or something. So I remember drawing that. I thought, no, the eyes are upside down or wrong or something. Maybe I just found it odd. And I remember doing that. But at this point, I don't think, let's say second grade, third grade, I may have mentioned it to a couple people, you know, that I've seen UFO before. And it's probably just like, yeah, whatever. And, you know, go on with the day. But as time went on, you know, and I got farther up into grade school and middle school and even high school, more and more people were like, yeah, I've seen something, you know, and they'd tell me their account, you know, from where they were all playing hide and seek one summer evening. And a triangle showed up over top of the neighborhood and they all ran home crying and so on and so forth. So that kind of stuff is just.
So there's some crazy stuff going on where you're from. I mean, you're not the only one experiencing it, obviously.
No, not at all. And in 2003, I don't want to skip too far ahead here, but in 2003, after my Bigfoot sighting, I had moved to Florida. And when I moved to Florida, there was a UFO wave in the Ohio Valley, everywhere from Ashland to Cincinnati, Fleming County, crop circles, triangle, broad daylight. Triangle over top the Ashland Bridge, so on and so forth. There's about a 10 or 15 minute video on YouTube. You'd have to dig really deep, 20 year old video or something, talking about the 2003 UFO wave in the area. Let's see. Let's see, 78, 79, about 1980, my mom got remarried and we moved a few miles away and now I had a stepbrother. So we were always in the woods, you know, or our family would go hiking or camping at Cave Run Lake or Carter Caves or whatever for, you know, a week at a time. And at this time, I really didn't have a UFO or odd Bigfoot things happen that, you know, that I didn't recognize. Gets up into, like I said, middle school or so. There's just, I don't remember much being on TV about UFOs or Bigfoot. I mean, I'm sure there was like In Search Of. Like that, you know, and it was pretty much any show that would come on about UFOs was pretty much 99%. This is all bullshit. Here's the expert on it. He's a dumbass, you know. So, yeah. And then over time,
I remember about that Project Blue Book was a TV show, and you know, and it, every episode was. Basically them debunking every UFO sighting, you know, that happened. And it's like so disappointing as a kid because, you know, I was a kid at the same time you were. I was probably a little bit older, but we just loved all the Bermuda Triangle, the UFO, the ghost stuff, the Bigfoot stuff. And there was just, people that weren't alive at that time or interested in that stuff at that time don't understand. There was no way to get that information other than a book, or if, like you said, every once in a while there's a TV show, you know. Yeah. I mean, for instance, last night on the news, on the world news on NBC, they had a story about a Harvard professor just wrote a paper in conjunction with the one department of the Pentagon talking about the possibility of a mothership being missed by the telescopes that have been watching the stars. And it was a serious paper presented on the news. And it's like, can you imagine that in our life when we were kids? They would have shut down NBC, you know?
Yeah, they really had to trickle the information. And I guess that's one of the neatest parts is that we're at the age, you know, anybody that's an early Gen X kid has seen it evolve from BS to oh, well, you know, but of course there's aliens, you know, or UFOs or whatever. That's what we've been trying to tell you. So basically anything the government has no control of, they're going to deny it. Bigfoot, dog man, whatever you want to get into, whatever subject, I think all rabbit holes lead to the same big den. And one day we're all going to end up in this one big room. It's like, hey, there's, you know, like,
yeah, but
it's all connected, you know.
By the way, there's the Easter Bunny and Redover's dog man. We've tried to keep them apart because dog man kind of likes rabbit, but you know.
I guess up until this point, too, that I've mentioned, I've had real vivid reoccurring dreams, and it would take me years to actually for that reoccurring dream to make sense and actually come true or develop, you know, like the hillside that the UFO went over. You know, I always had dreams that they were doing construction on that, and that there was a neighborhood at the top of the hill. And that there was like all this industrial machinery around, like lower. And, you know, over time, it kept getting lower and lower. And then in the mid 90s, they ended up scalping the top of it off and making a road across the top. I thought, OK, well, that's just like that kind of got me to where it's like, well, that's I've been dreaming about that for years. And here they end up doing it. And then they never did end up developing the area, but I'd had reoccurring dreams that there was like a concrete tunnel that I could, like an aqueduct of some sort, and I could look up through it and see light. And then a couple dreams later, I was at the top of it looking down, but then I could see the neighborhood. I was like, oh, there's the people. Yeah, they did build something up here, but they didn't in real life. They just did in the dream. So I would have dreams of being in the woods, and then I was showing people around, and I was like, I always knew which direction in my dreams. Like I could see lights in the distance. Like, oh, that's Louisa, or that's where the marathon station is. And if I look this way in my dream, that goes towards X location, you know, or whatever. So I tried to like map all this stuff out in my brain to where when I did have the dream, I could be conscious of the dream and kind of be more in tune with it, you know, and pay attention to it more. So the dream part is pretty important, really, the way it all ties in together, because some of the dreams that I've had over the past 40 some years have led me till today. You know, that's my current job position is that's what I do is I drive around in the woods. I can actually see that place in my dream. You know, I can look down the gas pipeline and see the marathons. Like, and that's, you know, that's just one part of the reoccurring dream that I had. And I was always showing people around, but I'm a trail patrol. That's what I do. People are out in the woods, lost. I tell them directional where they're at. So anyway, back in like 1986, let's say I was in fifth or sixth grade. I was going over to some girl's house in the evening, and on my way home, there's these three kids that were a little younger than me on bicycles, and they were like, look, and I just happened to be walking past them, and over the same area, I told you that the kids got ran off from playing hide and seek back in the late 70s, over that same neighborhood. There was what appeared to be three lights, but I mean, you could kind of see a craft, but you could kind of see through it, and it just shot off, you know. And those kids were like, whoa. And I just kept walking and just calculated that. It was like, yeah, that's weird. And it wasn't until years later did my buddy tell me about him playing hide and seek and seeing a UFO there. So that kind of hot spot is a same area as another story I've got here on this list of about 50 things. I'm trying to jump through this stuff and connect it a little bit, but there was kind of an upshift in friends having sightings and stuff, middle school, high school type things. And
I want to ask you though, quick here before we keep going. So did your sister experience or even your stepbrother experience any of these sightings too? Because, you know, your sister remembers floating around the house. So did she continue
No, she ended up being just kind of normal. And over the years, I would tell her things that happened, and she'd be like, well, that's weird. You know, just chalk it up as, well, she hadn't seen nothing. So, you know, and my stepbrother, I don't think he'd seen anything. I really don't remember. And I probably would if he would have had a story. But as a whole, we didn't see stuff together. We were just distracted by the 80s, I guess, you know. the 80s were pretty non-eventful, except for maybe like, I think towards the end of the 80s, I moved into a little place that was my grandfather's, a little rental. It was my first place that I ever rented as soon as I was out of high school. And I had an old TV from back in the day. And like I said, I had 3813 and had the UHF and VHF hook up in the back so you could hook an Atari up to it or whatever. So it was useless unless you wanted to hook a game system up to this TV. But I was poor. So I was like, hell yeah, I got a TV. But I could like, we go through the channels and then like hear like African conga music on it and shit. It's like, where's this even coming from? You know, I was like picking up somebody's ham radio from Nigeria or something. I don't know. It sounds like they're beating on logs. But anyway, I just got this real weird feeling to go outside. So I went outside in a clear night and I could see all the stars. And I was like, oh, there's a plane way up the 60,000 foot elevation, just cruising speed. That's nothing. But I kept staring at it, and then it just beamed me up, Scotty, shot off at, you know, 8,000-10,000 miles an hour, just pew, shot off. And I went back in the house and was like, okay, that's weird that I got the feeling and went out there and then saw that, you know. I'm real observant as far as knowing what high altitude aircraft do, or, you know, I can pick out a satellite or whatever, you know. I don't just count everything I see in the sky as a UFO. Seeing the first one real close is kind of the trend now, because I mean,
that's, it kind of sets the bar pretty high for what you're going to consider being a UFO.
Yeah. And in the late 90s, I was doing like a Fish concert tour with a bunch of buddies, and there was a mass UFO sighting in Meriwether, Maryland, during one of the concerts. And that was like the same summer that would have been the 20-year anniversary of me seeing the UFO in 77. So it was about 97 or 98. So I remember thinking, well, this is 20-year anniversary of when I saw the one in Westwood. And then there was the mass UFO sighting, which I thought was kind of cool. But then we'll skip on up to about 2000.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
I worked at a car detail shop, and the last car was to clean. I was doing the windows, and it was a large SUV with black tinted windows. And I just remember with this white foaming window cleaner, I made a perfect infinity symbol on the back window. And I stepped back and I was like, damn, that's pretty good. It's nice symmetry there, you know, pat myself on the back, popped it off. But the next day in the paper, or 2 days later in the paper, I saw where there was a lady in Carter County at Carter Caves that had an infinity crop circle in her rye field. And I thought, well, lo and behold, that's odd that, you know, it just made an infinity symbol. And then, you know, the United States didn't have very many crop circles. And the timing of it was pretty impeccable, too. Well, I think Monday, somewhere on page 7, there was an article saying, oh, yeah, update on the lady with the crop circle. We had so-and-so come out that's a scientist, and he said that it was a fairy ring. And I thought, man, that old lady is a farmer. She knows what a fairy ring is versus, you know, an infinity symbol in her damn rye field. So I just thought, you know, aren't they trying to cover even something like that up? That's just so weird, you know? And not long after that is when I had my first Bigfoot dream. Again, it was in like an industrial mining type area. And the best I can describe it is I was standing kind of down on this lower shelf, and there was it looked like a Chewbacca standing, looking towards the west, towards the sun, and the sun was shining on it, and you could tell it was red with about 5-inch long hair. It was gently blowing in the wind. I thought, that's an odd dream to have. You know, I didn't really have Bigfoot on my mind much, you know. But not long after that, let's see, 2001, it was 2003. There was five of us total, me and four of my buddies, decided to go to Ohio, to Wayne National Forest, where there was a regional drum circle put on by a rainbow hippie community type event. This one family owned a head shop, and they kind of put it on, and they knew most of the people. We knew maybe 10% of the people at this party. So we decided to go over to Lake Vesuvius, and we went out Paddle Creek. And it was 10:30 at night. And there was already, most of the people that were going to be there were there. I think it was Friday, may have been Saturday. I'm not sure on the day, but it was Cinco de Mayo. And it was only about 14% moonlight. I think I looked it up. It's waxing something, crescent, maybe. I'm not sure. I'm not good on my moon phases or whatever. But so we pass up the party, and we go out a little farther, and one of my buddies already had a tent set up. And I think we had one flashlight between us, and we're standing there in a circle. And I don't even think we had been there 20 minutes. And something about 100 foot up the hill let off the lowest rumbling growl into the highest pitched scream. And this lasted about 15 seconds. It was so loud. It was, compare it to being beside a train crossing or a volunteer fire department siren, you know, the 9 o'clock whistle type thing. It was just so loud you couldn't even look that direction. And I remember looking back at my buddies, and we were all just like, that's Bigfoot. you know, like no question, there just ain't anything that could do that that loud in those woods. We're not avid hunters or anything, but we know that that ain't no damn cat, or, you know, had to been larger than a cow to have the lung capacity to do something like that. But then it did it again and again, and we're like, oh my God, you know. So we walked back to camp, and we grabbed the kid that was putting on the festival and took him back there. And he was like, yeah, you know, that's, he heard a scream. And I was like, man, that's when I started asking him questions. And he said he had seen a Bigfoot cross the trail out there one day when he was just cutting down places for the camps. And he said he found evidence of stacking, you know, where you'll take three beavers, for instance, and eat the good parts and then just stack them on top of each other. And I thought, well, that's odd, you know. So that's when I discovered.
No, wait a second. I've heard of them stacking like rocks and stuff like that. Yeah. I've not heard of them stacking beavers.
Yeah.
That's a new one. That's a new one, yeah, on me. Holy smokes.
It's probably the name of a porn video somewhere.
I was gonna say, oh my gosh.
But
we won't even go down that road. We won't even.
Yeah, you can edit that part out if you want. But I just remember none of us were scared. And I'm speaking for myself, but not, you know, none of us like freaked out and went home crying or whatever, or won't go in the woods anymore. We just kind of almost chalked it up as normal, but abnormal, you know. And at this point, I'm tired of talking about UFOs to people. They're trying to like convince people that there's UFOs, and then here this happens, you know. So now I've got something else to like totally distract me away from the UFO thing. So I dug into the BFRO, just discovered it, you know, because of course I went home and like Bigfoot and Google Bigfoot. So that's when I started going down the rabbit hole, and I would, you know, chat with people on the forums, and probably had every one of the sightings memorized, whether it was historical or Native American. It doesn't matter if it was our state or not. You know, if somebody mentioned a report, I could tell you where it was, who it was. You know, I was just really into it. And again, at this point, people are like, yeah, there's no such thing as Bigfoot, you know. Just local people. So, I mean, I've almost started all back over again.
So. Now, did you find that there was a lot of activity where you had seen that Bigfoot? And was there any?
I was really surprised that not only that they were in the area, but there was that many of them, and that Ohio was one of the, you know, top three or four hot spots in the United States. And it was like, holy crap. So then I started looking up, you know, my county and the surrounding counties over here in Kentucky, and, you know, memorized the surrounding counties and how many sightings were in those. And of course, all those are gone. None of them are on there. It's like, well, I mean, if you're collecting data, why would you erase any data? But anyway, they were all pretty credible sounding reports, nothing extravagant, nothing, no woo factor to any of those particular incidents. But one of them was exactly where I live now, so just happened to put myself right there in the middle of it. But I'll get to all that here in a minute. So I had the screaming going on at Lake Vesuvius. I'll go back and make a video and put on my YouTube page as far as where I was standing, you know, just document. I'm going to go back and try to document all these things and give people more of a visual of where I was standing, where the UFO was, or where I was standing, where the screams came from, and show the land a little bit. My page now only has like three test videos on it to like see how long they'd load, and I was playing around with editing and stuff. So there's no Bigfoot information on there now, except for a tree pulled across the path, which I'll get to that here in a minute too. But so in 2003, soon after the Bigfoot scream thing, and I've got addicted to looking up information. I ended up moving to Florida, a little St. George Island. It's in the Panhandle. It's like a little state park, gated community, and public land in the middle. And of course, everybody on the island down there has seen some kind of orb or whatever. You have Tendleton Air Force bases due west, right next to Panama City. Been there a long time. A lot of weird activity on the coast there as far as orbs and stuff. So here's where my sister becomes a believer in at least the UFO thing. She's going to come down. And, you know, of course, we stayed in contact for a couple of weeks. She said, we're going to see the mothership when I get down there. It's like, I don't know. You know, she's just giving me a hard time, basically. You know, and so she gets down there. We're here a couple of days and we're camping out on the beach. And I had my back facing the beach one night, and I could see something come down the road, and it's 120 foot up in the air. The water plant that I was restoring had a water tower that said, welcome to St. George Island. It had lights shining up on it. So, I mean, this thing's glowing. And something flew in front of that, and I could see through it, and it seemed to have like a star pattern outline to it. But then I couldn't focus on it like it was right in my face, or, you know, it was like zooming in and out. And then it just kind of went past the water tower, like as if it was on like a laser beam trajectory, like, you know, guided, super smooth, no noise, no particular shape. It was almost like a flat screen type with fumes in the middle type thing. And I didn't even tell her about it. I just wasn't even going to try to explain that to her. So it was the next night. I'm facing that same way because I wanted to see it again. Well, she was looking towards the beach and was like, look, a shooting. And before she could say shooting star, this thing was from the air to about 50 foot from her on the left on the beach, size of a beach ball, glowing. And it was about 30 or 40 foot up in the air, orange. And she's just staring at it, saying nothing. And she said it went between the condominiums towards the bay. I didn't see it. Like I said, my back was turned. So she's like, dude. And, you know, and she jotted all the stuff down, what she saw and stuff. Is like, well, let me see that notebook. And I drew out what I had seen the day before. She documents everything. She's writing a novel of history of our freaking family and stuff. So, I mean, she writes down everything. That's what she's doing right now. She's writing. So anyway.
Is she sitting right beside you writing down everything right now?
No. I mean, but that's it. She's not here right now, but I guarantee it. She's got an ink pen in her hand, like writing a novel. So anyway, that's the day that she's like, holy crap. You know, I just saw a UFO, something that I can't explain what it was. I can't say that it's aliens, you know, but I mean, she saw something. So a couple weeks later, the job was over. She was just kind of on vacation, but getting ready to move out west. So I followed her out to Phoenix. I didn't have nothing to do. I was single, and we went out to Phoenix, ran into some friends out there and met some new friends. And, you know, we go explore around up towards Sedona area, north of Phoenix. And these two kids that I was hanging out with went hiking one night to go up to this hot springs, and they were like, what's that orange ball following us? It's like, that's not an orange ball. You know, that's one of those things that's on a high tension line. It's like an orange metal ball. He's like, yeah, but there's no power lines up here, you know? He's like, I don't know what it is. So anyway, he told me that the next weekend when they came back, they saw the same fall on them up the hill. I think one of them was too drunk to really comprehend what was going on. But I just thought that was odd that, you know, the one person, two people I meet out there have a sighting like the month that I'm out there, you know.
So, I mean, it's almost like you, they're attracted to, you know, like, and because I made a note because I did want to ask, like, do you think when you were seeing those grays back as a kid, Yeah. Were they taking you to the spaceship? Were they doing something? Or were they just, I mean, did you ever get that feeling? Did you ever have like flashback memories or anything
no,
like that?
No, I don't feel like I was ever on a ship of any kind or that they took me anywhere. And when they were actually in my room and standing around the bed, I wasn't really freaked out about it. And they would seemingly walk out through the wall and stuff. And I just thought that's just, you know, at that age, I just thought that's how it was. I didn't have anything else to compare it to, you know, or even know why that would happen or does anybody else experience that or anything. I have no idea about the Greys, but I remember seeing Greys in the future on TV shows or on skateboards and stuff. I was like, holy crap, that's some things that were in my room when I was little. So I don't know. They may have very well put some kind of little chip or something in me. Hell, I don't have any idea. Just making shit up at that point. I really don't know. But you know, believing in them is most of the battle. You get to a point to where it's like, it's obvious. And then you're like 100%. And then once you get to over 100% sure, then it's like you can basically ask them, hey, where you all at, you know, and they'll show up. So I'm not at 100% that I can do that every time. And I really narrowed it down to where I only do it if I get the feeling that they're in the area. Otherwise, no, I don't go try to do a C5, every day to try to get them to show up. You know, it's just like, you just can't abuse the privilege, you know, or whatever you want to call it.
There is also a school of thought that, you know, these things aren't so much extraterrestrial as they are extra dimensional. Yes. And if we're all living at the same time and all these different planes of existence are happening at the same time, It could be that if you are thinking about it, you're summoning them unintentionally to where you're at. Like,
right. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know anything.
Well, if you want to even get biblical and stuff, that's like, that's the same damn thing that they're describing, you know, any incident where somebody talks to something in the sky and lo and behold, here comes something, you know, fiery, however they chariot or whatever they want to describe it as back in the day, you know, it's like, it's that's kind of the secret. I mean, really, that's, if there is any cover up, that's something that the government would not want you to know, is that you can just ask them to show up, you know, like, because they don't have any control of that. But I didn't know about any of that. I didn't know that that was a thing until like 2018, when somebody's like, where did you do your CE5? I was like, what the hell's a CE5? It's like close encounters of the fifth kind. It's human initiated contact. It's like, oh, I see. No. And then I got into Dr. Stephen Greer, and he's just like, started off being reasonable, but it just became a money thing, you know, where you, and they include all kinds of technology and shit in this stuff. It's like, you don't need any of that. You just need to believe. You don't need a laser pointer and all this equipment to make all this happen. The same thing, that I feel the same way with Bigfoot stuff. It's like, if you're intentionally setting out to go find this thing, you'll never find it. That's not going to happen. You're not going to be the one that discovers and lets the world know the proof that this thing exists. They're going to do it on their own terms. And the same thing with how they leak information to you or little clues throughout time and stuff too, is really hand in hand with how the UFO information gets out too. You know, they'll just spoon fed, and you just have to kind of take all the cumulative information and happenings and kind of narrow it down. You know, like I'm pretty skeptical about everything, and I, you know, tear it apart you know, for years sometimes. And it's like, no, it's got to be this. It's got to be this. And then something else is like, oh, no, look here, just I'll prove it this way then. So I really don't know how many orbs I've seen, and not little ones that where I take a picture in my house and it's like floating around. Looks like it could be dust or it could be a moth. I'm talking something the size of a helicopter that's chrome orange, and there it goes, you know, or I'll get the feeling that one's around and me and somebody else, one of my close friends, will witness it. I've had them come right up to our face, you know, within 20 foot. It looked far away in the woods, and then as it made it through the woods, it's like, no, that's not a buggy, you know, from where I work at an off-road park. There's not even a trail over there. It's like a 200-foot drop-off, and this thing's like at eye level when we're up on the ridge. And my friend and I are just staring at it, and I had been driving around for hours talking about UFO and Bigfoot to her, you know, and then, like, we get out, and I pee, and she's cracks open a beverage, and we're standing there, and it's like, she's like, that's got to be a buggy. I was like, that's not a buggy. There's not a trail over there. And the thing got right up to us, and we're just staring at it going, what in the world is that? And then it just went back where it came from. But since we have a map at the off-road park where I work, I jot all this stuff down. Then I end up putting straight lines through it to see the similarities of where this stuff is. And some of my highest activity is right from where that orb came from. So that's the kind of connections I like to like draw out and get an actual visual of what's happening, you know, like directions and so on and so forth. You know, like 2003 to 2010 was pretty uneventful, I guess. I would have the reoccurring dreams that would kind of evolve. Let's see. Started looking into like Native American mounds and ley lines, stuff like that, you know, and Earth, and like you could find, if you found two different mounds and put a line in between them, you could go through that line and find other mounds, you know, by hitting pictures or info or whatever on Google Earth, and like shows you stuff as you cruise across, and you can find other mounds within this ley line. And then if you zoom back, it makes all these geometric patterns, so on and so forth. So I did a lot of stuff like that, and watched, I remember discovering that you could watch live webcams, and I was on Google Earth and I hit live webcams, and of course I watched some downtown New York stuff, people waving at the camera. But then there was one that was an observatory. I thought, well, I'm gonna go check out this live cam at the observatory. Well, lo and behold, a chrome orb showed up in the webcam, and you could go back and watch it again, you know. So I like saved it and made a YouTube video of it out of my old YouTube channel. It's called Freedom or Else, all one word. You can't even tell what it says because I didn't put any spaces in it or nothing. It's just Freedom or Else. And if you go on that page, it's like Observatory UFO, and you can see it. And it's like the only thing in the screen, and it's, you really can't tell how big it is. I would imagine about the size of a car, like Volkswagen Beetle or something, you know. But I thought it was weird that I just picked an observatory, look at it, and holy crap, there's a friggin' UFO on it. So I made a YouTube video of that. Now, I was married at this time. I'd been married about 3 years. And my ex-wife, my wife at the time, had told me when she was a little girl, she was babysitting, walking back towards her house, and her and the lady that she was babysitting for, or her kids, was walking her back to the house. And then they saw a UFO behind her house, just kind of hovering. And so that was the only introduction to UFO she had ever had. So when she met me, I could go on for days about this stuff. And she was like, yeah, whatever. So she's kind of like where my sister was. She'd seen something, but didn't know what it was. Wasn't 100% believer, but all that developed over time. and it got to the point to where one day, like, for instance, I was coming home from work in a pretty day like this. I'm sure you're not far away, so it's probably blue skies and clear. I was driving up past this little farm, and this is going to sound ridiculous, but there was a black pterodactyl flying over this friggin' farm field. And I remember slowing down to stare at this thing. It's like, man, that's way over 20-foot wingspan. You know, that's a pretty good-sized bird, and its wings flapped in the middle, and it just kind of cruised out and just swung to the right a little bit. I don't know why I didn't stop and, like, at least try to take a picture of the damn thing. I mean, I had a phone in 2011 or whatever. You know, it's perfectly capable of taking a picture, but I didn't. So anyway, I told her about it. She's like, that's weird. So the next day, a buddy of mine that takes that same route to go from his house to my house, he came by and he's all excited. He's like, dude, he's like, my wife was on the way home yesterday and saw this huge black bird. And I was like, let me guess, right over the hill here? He's like, yeah, over that farm. I was like, yep, that's where I saw it too. That's the only thing I've ever really thought was abnormal, you know, like out of all this.
But you know what? There's all kinds of reports out of West Virginia about those giant birds.
Yeah.
Giant looking birds.
Very prehistoric, massive.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. And all really close. They wouldn't have to fly very far to get here and do a loop around the river or whatever. I thought that was weird, but that was kind of in the doldrums of my UFO and Bigfoot stuff. And there wasn't much happening else, but I mean, that happened around 2013 or something. And that's when we ended up getting a new little lab pup, and he was about, I don't know, maybe 6 months old before I ever like took him out in the woods. And I thought, I'm gonna go to Lake Vesuvius.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of the From the Shadows podcast. Until next time, never shy away from the darkness or what may be lurking in the shadows. We are out.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.